Hi everyone, it's Sandy Cruz from Sandy K Nutrition, health and lifestyle queen, and I'm here to show you that balanced living works. This is especially for all you ladies over 40. We will cover a range of exciting topics with many special guests, and I really look forward to this season. Bye for now. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to episode 15 of Sandy K Nutrition, Health and Lifestyle Queen. This week, I have Dr. Lara Spector. She is a naturopathic doctor, and she has a few areas of specialty, one of them being women's hormones. Now, this is a pretty big topic, so I've decided to break this into two parts, part one and part two. And I can pretty much say every woman I know has a little bit of hormonal upheaval, let's just say. I being one of them. I am constantly playing, what's the word I'm looking for? Not catch up, but I'm constantly monitoring. How about that? Monitoring my hormones. I just turned 50 this year. So, and I am still menstruating, not necessarily regularly, but I'm there. I'm still doing it. My body's still doing it. The average age in Canada is actually 51 to go into menopause. Now, the reason I love this episode so much is because it affects so many women. And this can actually start in your 30s. I can tell you right now, my hormonal journey started for sure in my 30s. After I had my second child, I had quite a few symptoms that were never addressed. I back then had no idea. I had no idea that I had very severe adrenal fatigue. I also had no idea that I had thyroid issues. And now, in hindsight, when I look back at my issues with my thyroid, it likely started postpartum after my second child. So there were many symptoms that I had. I was extremely thin. And I think my daughter would have been not even 3 months old at that time. I had issues with having enough breast milk. I lost so much weight so quickly. My daughter did not sleep, so I also had severe adrenal fatigue. That would have been when I was 35. And then I went through many years of weight gain, weight loss, weight gain, weight loss, weight gain, weight loss. And it went on like that for a long time. And it wasn't until I turned 41, and this would have been 1 year after my daughter was diagnosed with a malignant tumor at the age of 5, so going down quite a few years now, that I started to all of a sudden, out of the blue, have migraines with aura. So the only reason this was even investigated was because my general practitioner, my GP, my general physician at the time, was actually away. He had never palpitated for thyroid nodules or lumps. I don't recall it. And if he had, he would have felt the one that was 1 inch in size. I had 5 of them. There was a doctor, she was a substitute doctor for him at the time. And she's like, well, you know what? That's very odd for a woman at the age of 41 to experience her first migraine with aura. So let's investigate this a little bit more. And so she did. She sent me for a brain MRI. She sent me for ultrasounds. And then she sent me for an ultrasound on my carotid arteries. These are the arteries in your neck that go to your head to see if there was any kind of obstruction or plaque buildup, anything of that nature. And when she did that, there was an incidental finding of 5 lumps on my thyroid. My carotid arteries look beautiful, which is great. However, the lumps in my thyroid were of concern. Excuse me. So that prompted me to actually, I started to do my own advocating at that time because I started to get worried. I felt like something was wrong. And, you know, I've had now 2 episodes on intuition. And I really, really do believe, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this episode, and you're doing it because you're such a supportive spouse, I'm going to say there's no way my husband would be listening to this on women's hormones. However, I'm sure there are many men out there who are very supportive of their wives and they want to understand. I'm not saying mine isn't. I'm just saying this is maybe outside of his scope of interest, which is fine too. But what I'm saying is, oh, geez. Now, see, I don't even know where I was. Okay, let me get back to my actual story. So then I actually did not get an endocrinologist that easily. So here's where my own advocating came into play. I did this with my daughter the year before. And we were fortunate enough that we have a family friend who is a surgeon who actually operated on my daughter at the age of 5 to do the initial surgery, which was simply a biopsy. Anyway, that's another story for another time. However, I learned from that experience that you need to take control of your own health. And I'm not saying medicine is no good or conventional medicine, because conventional medicine saves lives. It was our family friend who is a surgeon who I can say saved my daughter. So there you go. So I'm not insulting conventional medicine. But what I am saying is, as a person who is intuitive, who is self-aware, you need to take control of your health. You have to. You have to take it in your own hands. So I actually found out about an organization at that time. This is many, many years ago. It was relatively new in Toronto. It's called Medcan. I contacted Medcan. I got the names of the endocrinologists there. I somehow got myself into this endocrinologist, because my doctor allowed me, he actually, or she, I can't remember who it was, referred me to this doctor that I wanted to see in Toronto at Mount Sinai Hospital. And at that time, he was known as a leader in thyroid health, thyroid cancer, all of these, anything to do with the thyroid. He was an endocrinologist. He has since passed. He's Dr. Paul Walfish, and he's an amazing endocrinologist. So I got in to see him. He sent me to a radiologist? The guy who does the fine needle biopsy. Yeah, I think they are. They do fine needle biopsies, and they do it under, I think it's an ultrasound to make sure that they know that they're getting into the actual nodule. This is kind of a long story, but it's a really important one because it's all about taking control of your own health. So I still remember that day that I went into Toronto. I was all by myself. I'm like, yeah, no big deal. I'm going to get this fine needle biopsy. Big deal. Oh my God, people. I'm not trying to scare you. If you have thyroid issues and you need to have a fine needle biopsy, it might be a good idea to take a friend with you or a family member, because I thought it was not a big deal. I went by myself. I was a little bit traumatized by the entire experience of a needle going into your neck. Anyway, again, I'm getting off topic, but what was interesting is that the first time they did the fine needle biopsy, which is not common, they got the papillary carcinoma cells. So papillary carcinoma is a type of thyroid cancer, and it is not easy to diagnose from 5 or 4 or 3 or 2, however many you have, little lumps. But this doctor, this endocrinologist, that's why he sent me to his radiologist in Toronto, because, and I hope it's a radiologist, but you guys know what I mean. He was the one who was an expert in thyroid. So what often happens with women who have thyroid issues is that they will get multiple inconclusive results. Mine was not inconclusive. The very first attempt, he got right into that nodule, into all of them, I think, and found the papillary carcinoma cancer. So then, you know, then I was off. I was told I should probably take the whole thing out, the whole thyroid out, because it was bilateral, which means I had nodules on both sides of the thyroid. And they said the chances of it coming back on the other side where there were nodules, it was very high. When it came back, I had only one of the five nodules that were cancerous. And just so happened, it was the smallest nodule. So it wasn't that big one that was 1 inch that could be felt. So interesting, right? So it was the smallest one. And that's why I always say it all boils down to stress, ladies and guys, but mostly ladies. And I'm going to tell you why. Because I had a very stressful labor with my second daughter. I was stressed out as I was a new mom, but this was my second child. But I was stressed out because I did not sleep, because she did not sleep at all for 8 months. It was really, really tough. She was a very, very happy but fussy baby. So it was very hard. And then over the years, I never really took note of the fact that, yeah, I was a stressed out mom to young children. So I'm going to say that's where my entire journey began, in my 30s. And so it all boils down to self-awareness. Had I known then what to look for, had I known that these symptoms that I had were not to be ignored, and they weren't just, whatever, you're a new mom, big deal. Because that's what happened. It was shoved aside, and a lot of new moms go through this. And so, you know, this podcast isn't really about new moms and hormonal balance there. However, I can tell you that you don't get cancer in a day. I had thyroid lumps many years before I actually had cancer, thyroid cancer. And I'm going to say this too. Had I really paid attention to my symptoms, I would never have had thyroid cancer. I might have had some thyroid issues, I'm guessing. I had postpartum thyroiditis that was never diagnosed. So had I had somebody educate me back then, I don't think I would be without a thyroid today. So also, had I had somebody teach me on how to deal with my stress when my daughter was sick, I might have had thyroid issues, but I don't think I would have had thyroid cancer because of those five lumps in my neck that might have been there for many, many, many years. Because remember, I had her at 35 and I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer at 41. So those lumps were there for a long time, but it was the smallest one, 6 millimeters, people, not even 1 centimeter. Large. So I was one of the fortunate ones. The fact that I was able to get a diagnosis with, of all the five lumps, the smallest one, 6 millimeters, under 1 centimeter, that they found papillary carcinoma in a fine needle biopsy. Shit, man, like that is not common. And so what I'm saying is that The stress of having my daughter ill was what changed thyroid nodules to thyroid cancer. I truly believe that stress can really make you sick. And that's why, for me, every single client that I look at their stress levels, and that is whether it's a female or male. But females have one different issue. When they go into perimenopause and then menopause, hormonal upheaval is very common. So your hormones are up and down. And for women, this is common. Okay? I'm always working on keeping my hormones in check, but unless I get my stress in check, forget about what's happening with my estrogen and my progesterone and my testosterone. Forget about those. If my cortisol, which is your stress hormone, is crazy out of whack, then, you know, you can't address the estrogen and the progesterone alone. We can, but, you know, that cortisol is still the one that I believe is kind of the danger zone. You don't, like, cortisol is good. Don't get me wrong. Cortisol is what helps you, you know, figure out what's dangerous, what's not, when to act. Like, say, I need to protect myself. Cortisol is not necessarily a bad thing, but cortisol, too much of it is. So it can affect your sleep. It can affect your health. As I can say for sure, it affected mine. It can affect a lot of things. It can affect all the other sex hormones. So this conversation with Dr. Lara Spector is a very important one for us women who are self-aware, who do advocate for themselves, to say something doesn't feel right. Don't tell me it's nothing, because it's something. And I need to address this before it becomes a bigger problem. Your body doesn't tell you that something is wrong for no reason. And if your body is repeatedly telling you, something's wrong, and you're not addressing it, that's when I am a believer that is when it can turn into illness. So, there you go. So what I am saying is, ladies, advocate for yourself. Don't ignore your symptoms that don't seem to correct themselves. Build a health care budget for yourself. Listen, back when my daughter was born, and back when I had thyroid issues, you know, I'm very fortunate that I have a husband who just wants me to be as healthy as I can be, because I've always been, well, since my daughter was a year and a half, the primary caregiver for our children because of his job. So he always supported me when I said something wasn't right. And it was back then, I would have been, I would have been 40, I don't know, 42. So many years of having issues, finally having my thyroid out, all of that. I actually went to see the Institute for Hormonal Health, which is where Dr. Lara Spector works. She's the head naturopathic doctor there. And that clinic is led by Dr. Christy Prowse. She is an OBGYN. And she is an OBGYN that is conventionally medically trained. However, she believes that we need to look at all modalities for optimal health. And this is where health budget comes into play. And I talk about this all the time. So I have a naturopathic doctor. I have myself as a registered holistic nutritionist. I have an OB. I also have an endocrinologist. I also have an osteopath. And not all of this is covered in my conventional medicine, you know, OHIP. In Canada, we have OHIP. So I have to pay out of pocket. I pay out of pocket for my supplements. I pay out of pocket for a lot of things. But so many of us pay out of pocket for a Starbucks $5 a day. Holy smokes, people. $5 a day. Think about that. So I'm doing the math because I'm not a mathematician. That is $150 a month. Okay. $1,800 a year on Starbucks. If you're one of those Starbucks fancy coffee drinkers. So if you take that budget, take out that sugar that you get from those fancy coffees from Starbucks, and I'm not judging, but I'm just saying, you know, and use that budget for yourself, you're going to get a pretty healthy budget where you can manage your health in its entirety. And if that means, you know, getting IV therapy, if that means spending more money on supplements, if that means seeing a naturopathic doctor or seeing a registered holistic nutritionist, whatever that means, I will say, ladies, do not cheap out on your health. Had I known back then what I know now, I would have started earlier with advocating for my entire health. Because while conventional medicine is important, we need more. We need more to balance out our entire health. So with that, I will cut on through to the interview with Dr. Lara Spector. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sandy K Nutrition, Health and Lifestyle Queen. And today with me, I have Dr. Lara Spector. She is a naturopathic doctor, and she practices in Toronto and Oakville, Ontario. She is dedicated to providing personalized and compassionate care to all of her patients, and she addresses the root cause of symptoms. She has clinical focus in hormonal health, gut health, and the body and the mind connection. See, I love that. She works at the Institute for Hormonal Health, and she is one of the lead naturopathic doctors there, and she's head of IV therapy and family medicine. Welcome, Dr. Lara.
Thank you. It's so great to be here with you today.
Thanks. So I'm really happy to have you here because our focus today will be primarily on women's hormones and stress. And we're actually even going to talk about and bring into the importance of gut health and the importance of liver health. They're all interconnected. So I guess what we'll do is we'll just start and talk about what happens with women as they enter perimenopause, because you know that my focus is women over 40. And so, you know, maybe let's talk about what happens in perimenopause, Dr. Lara.
Yeah, of course. So I'll actually maybe take it back a couple years. So usually starting at around age 35, and it can happen a little bit later for women, they start to get an ovulatory cycle, which means that every month they may not be ovulating or releasing an egg. If we are not releasing an egg every month, that means, or not ovulating every month, that means that we're not producing progesterone consistently. So with the lack of progesterone, that can create a hormonal imbalance where sometimes estrogen is higher than progesterone. We want our hormones to be balanced, and that can create symptoms of usually estrogen dominance or low progesterone. As well, estrogen levels can go up and down in addition to progesterone levels dropping.
Okay, and this can happen as early as late 30s, you're saying?
Yes, I often find with a stress-related phenomenon happening, it can happen earlier, so in the late 30s, yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that kind of makes sense because I'm going to, you know, now in hindsight, when I look back, I'm like, yeah, I probably had a lot of that going on, but self-awareness was not quite there for me back then. So,
right.
I mean, it's good to talk about. Okay. So, that's good to know. And then, you know, of course, we all know menopause is when your menstruation ceases for a year. Is that correct?
Yes. So the perimenopausal period is anywhere, it can be from late 30s until, you know, a year after your last period. And then postmenopausal is any time after that last year.
Okay. Okay. And maybe if you could just provide us with, because this will help women become more self-aware, is if you could just tell us, like, what are some of the symptoms of low progesterone?
Yeah, no, of course. So some of the symptoms of low progesterone can be really bad PMS. So some women, you know, have said they've never experienced PMS before until they're, you know, early to mid 40s. So that period before your period and lasting anywhere from 2 weeks to a couple days before your period. So you may feel more irritable, more anxiety, insomnia. Progesterone is the, we call it the mother hormone because it's our sedative hormone. It's our calming hormone. So as levels drop of progesterone, you can experience more of those anxiety or nervous irritability signs. Also, painful periods can be a sign of low progesterone, mood issues, including depression. You can also experience spotting before your period, leading up to the period, painful breath before the period, insomnia, like I mentioned before. Insomnia, anxiety, and the PMS are the most common things we see with low progesterone.
Okay. Okay. And what about high, because you talked about high estrogen, and because I do know it's kind of a balancing act between the progesterone and the estrogen. So, you know, what are, first, I guess, what are some of the causes of high estrogen, and what are the symptoms of high estrogen?
Yeah, of course. So causes of high estrogen can be environmental. So you could have exposure through toxins like BPA in our water bottle or hormones in meat products or dairy products. So those are some of the environmental plus makeup and personal care products as well. You can have the parabens, phthalates located there. The other one is the anovulatory cycles we were talking about. So if you're not making progesterone as consistently, that allows for unopposed estrogen to rise. So the progesterone really keeps the estrogen in check. And so if you don't have enough progesterone, it'll increase the estrogen.
Right.
And also, there can be a genetic component as well, just how you metabolize your hormones. You can have a hard time detoxifying or excreting excess estrogen. And then the other one I would say is having inefficient excretion pathways of estrogen. So that's what we're going to talk about in our second episode of addressing liver health and gut health, because that's how we actually remove the excess estrogen. And if
okay.
we can't remove it, it'll recirculate and increase.
Okay, that makes sense. So really, I guess what can happen is, just if I'm understanding correctly, in some cases, you might not even necessarily have high estrogen, but because your progesterone is so low, there's that inequity or an imbalance?
Exactly.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So that can be happening in your 40s. It can be happening after or during actual menopause, right?
Exactly. So estrogen, we see it in the 40s, where it's sort of a roller coaster. Some months you might be feeling like you have high estrogen, you know, and we can talk about the signs of that later too. And then other points you can be feeling like you have low estrogen. It just goes up and down, especially, you know, leading up to menopause.
Okay. Yeah. Cause like lower estrogen is more common once you're closer to menopause, correct?
Exactly. So usually in the year leading up to menopause, that's when estrogen really drops. But before that year, before menopause, that's when estrogen's going up and down.
Okay, so what would be symptoms of low estrogen then?
Yeah, so low estrogen symptoms tend to show up as hot flashes, night sweats, It can also be dryness. So we say dry eyes, dry vagina, dry mouth. Estrogen provides a lubricant. Other signs can also be heart palpitations. I've seen that before, where symptoms of low estrogen show up like that. Brain fog, memory doesn't maybe seem as sharp. Estrogen is a hormone that has receptors on multiple areas of the body, but especially the brain. So that can be something that women start to notice, as well as depression is one as well. So all of those, but the most common ones we see are hot flashes, night sweats, and vaginal dryness.
Okay. Now, just sticking with this estrogen and progesterone, how can a woman, if she knows she's got these symptoms, mm-hmm. what can she do at home to kind of help, I guess, keep it more balanced?
Yeah, of course. Well, one of the things I didn't mention about low progesterone as a cause is stress. So stress or cortisol, which we'll talk about in the second part, will steal from progesterone. So it can make that hormonal balance, it can cause that imbalance even more between estrogen and progesterone. So definitely working on stress levels is huge. So I always suggest, you know, the more self-care is the better, whatever you can do to make time for yourself, whether that's, you know, creating, you know, a yoga schedule or meditation schedule. Exercise is huge as well. It can be a huge stress relief for women. I always recommend just listening to your body with exercise if it feels like it's too much for you. If you feel tired during or after or lightheaded, then I would scale back because that could be more of a stress on your system. So it's a fine line there. I'm sure you know, Sandy, nutrition plays such a huge role on hormones. So, you know, looking at your diet and seeing where you can reduce any sort of forms of physical stress, you know, in your diet. So, you know, figuring out what maybe foods you're sensitive to, figuring out, you know, if there's certain foods that create hot flashes, you know, the common ones being caffeine, spicy foods, sugar, big ones too. So there's lots that can be done from a diet perspective. And then reducing stress, I would say, are the biggest things
okay.
that you can do at all.
That's, that's great advice. Now, I'm going to say over the last few months, most people I know are under stress.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
given our circumstances in the whole world right now, mm-hmm. I think there's that lingering stress everywhere, no matter how close or far you are from it, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I know now, you know, a lot of women, especially, you know, in the 40s, like in that time frame, are having a hard time at home, having, you know, to perform multiple roles, right? So
yes.
it can feel like it's more pressure.
100%. I mean, and the other thing I wanted to touch on too is one of the things I recommend to clients, I'm not sure what you think about it, but I'd love to hear your opinion on it, is seed cycling. Like, what do you think, because that's using food as medicine to help kind of, I guess, balance out the major ebbs and flows of those sex hormones. Like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's definitely helpful. Do I think that it really dramatically changes estrogen and progesterone levels? No, but
okay.
I think getting the healthy fat, specifically with seed cycling, you're focusing on omega-3 fat in the first half of the cycle and more of the omega-6 in the latter.
Mm-hmm.
So, the omega-3s promote more of the estrogen. The omega-6 would promote more of the progesterone. So I think it's definitely helpful because a lot of those seeds, you're getting that good ratio of omegas. And we know healthy fats and are so helpful from a hormonal perspective and balancing blood sugar, reducing stress. So I think they have their benefits. So I definitely think it's something great women can do at home. I think in addition to other things to help balance their hormones.
Okay. Now, what about things like chaste tree berry or Vitex?
Yeah, I love.
Okay,
berries.
Yeah. So tell me, because I have, even though I'm not an herbalist, obviously anybody who's in the holistic health space knows what chaste tree berry is, but I've heard that there are some limitations in terms of length of time you should use that, or maybe not. Like, what are your thoughts on chaste tree, and maybe tell us how it can help naturally?
Yeah, of course. So chaste tree, otherwise known as Vitex, is a herb, and you can get it in a capsule form or tincture form, which is basically a liquid that you can take of the herb. And it's known as a hormone normalizer. So really, though, what it does, what its mechanism is that it increases progesterone indirectly by working on basically a reaction in the brain to increase the hormone LH, which then allows for a greater chance of ovulation and therefore to produce more progesterone. So I find it's a great herb to work with. You definitely want to take it consistently for 3 months at least to have an effect. I think with Vitex or chaste tree, the way that I recommend it, and I do find it effective, is 6 months on, 3 months off.
Okay, yeah, that's what I've heard.
And then another 6 months on, especially during the perimenopausal period. I find it really helpful for women that have PMS, breast pain, especially before their period, anxiety, insomnia, for fertility issues as well. It's great because, again, it works on, you know, increasing the chances of ovulation. So, I find it a great herb. I definitely recommend it a lot.
Now, I know we're talking about perimenopause and menopause, but I just want to ask this question because it's in my mind. I've also heard it's great for teenage girls who have no periods or have missed periods because of PCOS. Is that right too, or no?
Yes. So the thing with PCOS is they can have high LH levels
Okay.
already, which can be part of the problem. So with PCOS, you want to identify kind of what type of PCOS they have, and you want to test and look at their hormones and test their LH levels. So if I see a woman that already has high LH, I might not go to Vitex.
Okay.
But if they don't have the high LH and they, you know, don't have a lot of progesterone, they're not getting their periods, then yes, that is something that I do recommend.
Okay, good. I had to go off topic a little bit there just because I have read about it, but, you know, not in great detail for PCOS. So back to the hot flashes, the symptoms of hot flashes. Yeah. Now, I have read that that's also an indication of inflammation, which may be why some women have it and some don't. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. So I often say hot flashes, most women think that they're caused by low estrogen, but they can also be caused by cortisol. And every time there's inflammation, it increases cortisol.
Right.
So it's through the cortisol mechanism that it causes the hot flash, but yes, definitely inflammation. So I've had women that, for example, after they sprain their ankle, hot flash is like nuts. So definitely it can happen with inflammation through the cortisol mechanism.
That's very interesting that you say that. So for a woman, let's say she is not quite in menopause yet, but nearing menopause, who's having extreme hot flashes. Now, the other thing I have done some research on is black cohosh.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know a lot about that particular herbal for women getting close to menopause or even in menopause?
Yeah, I find it works great for some women, definitely. It definitely has its research in terms of reducing hot flashes. I find you do want to take it consistently, like Vitex, and
okay.
You don't have to worry as much about black cohosh, you know, in terms of going off of it. It's one that you can stay on.
Okay.
So yeah, no, I think it's a great option. If women want to go the more, you know, natural route versus, you know, bioidentical hormone therapy for, you know, the hot flashes, then definitely Black Cohosh would be one of my go-tos.
Okay. Now, anything's to be, I guess, concerned of with interactions? Because I know herbals can be very, very potent and there can be interactions, but Black Cohosh is pretty, like, even safe, like, not really a lot of interactions. Is that correct? Or?
Yeah, no, you know, there, you have to use a little bit of caution. You know, there is, you know, a tiny bit of research to show that in a very small subset of women, you know, it can increase estrogen or the phytoestrogens, right?
Okay.
Which is part of how it works in terms of hot flashes. So if there's any, you know, family history or, you know, personal history of any estrogen-related cancers, that's something that you may want to be more cautious with.
Okay.
Again, I'll reiterate, it doesn't cause cancer. It's just if you've had a personal history of an estrogen-related
right. It's like it takes up one of those docking receptors, right? Like it, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. It just means proceed with caution if you've got that, like a BRCA2 gene, right? Like any of those genes that, right, could cause like estrogenic type cancers.
Exactly. And even, you know, flax seeds, for example, do the exact same thing you're mentioning on the receptors.
So, yes.
You know, it just be cautious with it if you have that BRCA gene and don't have, you know, too much of it, right? But I think the benefits outweigh the harms.
Right. And really, it's a matter of replacing those docking estrogen receptors with the good estrogen versus the BPA plastics crappy estrogen, right? So
1,000%.
Yeah.
I couldn't have said it better.
Yeah. So, okay. We've got a little bit more time for part one, if it's okay. I would like to just get into stress and cortisol because that is such a massive piece of the puzzle for a woman's general health. So, you know, we all know that, you know, I personally have had a lot of issues with my adrenal health. And, you know, what are some of the best things you can do as a woman to kind of take control of that stress hormone, cortisol? Because we know it does good things too, right? Like it's, you don't want to take it all away. But,
yeah, no,
you know, so it's kind of been demonized, but I mean, too much is not a good thing, right? So what can a woman do to help that?
Yeah, of course. You know, I always suggest working with a practitioner, you know, to, you know, get to figure out, you know, do you have low cortisol or high cortisol, you know, what may be the best, for example, herbs to address the adrenals. But to take a bigger picture than that, I think of the adrenal glands, you know, the glands that produce your cortisol or stress hormone as sort of a bank account. So you think about all the things that you're essentially withdrawing from your adrenals. So all, we'll say in brackets, the stressors. And stressors can be mental and emotional stressors, and they can also be physical stressors. So, for example, too much exercise or food sensitivity or any inflammation, any infection, any environmental toxin, you know, electromagnetic sensitivity we talk about. So any type of stressor we talk about as a withdrawal from the adrenal. So how can we work on, you know, reducing our amount of stressors, but also improving our resilience or our perspective on those stressors, right?
Okay.
So sometimes you can't change the stress, but you can, you know, change the approach to it, whether it's meditation or being a therapist, you know, working through those. And so those are the withdrawals. So we try and reduce as many withdrawals as we can. And then we think about the things that we add into our adrenal bank account. So that could be, you know, the mindfulness practices, things that reduce our stress, you know, the yoga, the herbs that are so great for our adrenals, herbs like ashwagandha, rhodiola, phosphatidylserine. There's lots of different supports that we can do, the B5. Vitamin C are excellent for the adrenals. There's also IV therapy as well, which is the direct administration of all those vitamins
yes.
that bypasses the gut, so you're able to get higher dosages feel better faster.
Okay. So, yes.
There's so, lots of ways.
I want to ask you actually, because, now where Dr. Lara is at, she's at the Institute for Hormonal Health. I actually went there many, many years ago after I had my thyroid out, and it was like the only place back then that I could actually get help for, because I went to see my doctor and they're like, oh yeah, your thyroid level's perfect and there's nothing more I can do. And I'm like, well, why can I not get off the couch? What's wrong with me? And Dr. Lara and I actually talked about this. And the one thing that women have a tendency to do is take a back seat to their health. And because it costs to do supplemental care, many women will set this aside. And I was not one of them. And I'm pretty happy with the fact that I was at the IHH, Institute for Hormonal Health. And one of the things I did was IV therapy. Pretty intense when I first started going there. So maybe, Dr. Lara, you can tell us what exactly is IV therapy. And, you know, there's different cocktails, I guess. Maybe tell us a little bit about it and how it bypasses the gut. So if you have bad gut health, it's great for that, right? But
Yeah, of course. So IV therapy is the direct administration of nutrients into the bloodstream. It usually takes about 45 minutes, depending on, you know, what cocktail you're getting, usually in a relaxed, you know, calm setting. And in that IV bag that you're receiving, you're getting really high dosages of nutrients. And we usually test people's, we always test blood work first to just look at the levels first to see, you know, where they're at. But the nutrients that we use, for example, for the adrenal cocktail would be high dose vitamin C. So about 10 grams of vitamin C, which, you know, typically in a supplement, you get about 1 gram or 1,000 milligrams.
Right.
You get lots of all of the B vitamins, extra B5, B6, B12, as well as the other ones, B1, B2. And then you also get magnesium, which most women that are stressed are quite low in magnesium. Calcium, you get selenium, zinc, and then amino acids as well, which are really the building blocks for our hormones and our neurotransmitters. So the whole cocktail, that's the one for the adrenal glands. There's also one that's called the Body Bliss, which is also for the adrenals, but it has the added layer of helping with weight management. So in terms of blood sugar regulation and fat metabolizing factors, that's added on.
Great.
Then there's also a high performance one and a feel-good one for the immune system. So there's different ones, and they're a little bit different, but really at the core of all of them is working on the adrenal and just supporting overall gut health and immune health.
Right. No, it's great. I mean, I personally did it, and I have to say, I was one of those people that hit rock bottom and didn't know where to go in terms of my health. So, you know, we do have to close off part one of this, but there's so much here that Dr. Lara and I will be going back to part two, because there's a lot of information and I hope you ladies are taking some notes. But I do want to close off this segment on one thing, and that is setting a budget for your own health. And Dr. Lara and I talked about this. So many of us women, I mean, we walk around, we're like martyrs, right? Like, oh no, we can handle everything. And, you know, just taking control of your health, you know, setting aside a budget, because I'm not putting down conventional medicine here, people. I'm just saying that you're not going to get all the care you need when you are having odd symptoms from conventional medicine. So is there anything you'd like to add to that, Dr. Lara?
Yeah, no, of course. I was going to say, like, you know, in addition to what you said about conventional medicine, it's needed 1,000%.
Yes.
And, you know, we all need a family doctor. but often because of our medical system, it's great that we have free healthcare. There's only so much our family doctors can do at the end of the day.
Yes.
So it's great to have a team, you know, with your family doctor, to have, you know, either a naturopathic doctor, a nutritionist, you know, you were mentioning you also see an osteopath and, you know, a therapist. It's great to have a team definitely to advocate for you and support you in every aspect of your health.
Yes, for your best health, really. That's the key. So thank you, Dr. Lara, very much for your time, and I look forward to recording part two.
Yeah, me too. This was a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Join me next week where I cover off more exciting topics. I hope to continue to engage you and excite you and show you that living in your 40s, 50s, and beyond can be exciting, balanced, and healthful. Bye for now.